We warmly welcome Rich as our speaker for this Monday Night Crew Miracles meeting on March 2nd. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on oafootsteps.com as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please only use your first name or an alias when you share. The opinions expressed here today are those of individuals, are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Take it away.
Okay. My name is Rich, compulsive eater, bulimic, 100-pounder, and thank you, Olivia, for asking me. It's definitely an honor to speak at any meeting. I say because, I was given my, my life was spared, because of this, through this program, and I'm going to share a few pictures because, to me, pictures are definitely worth a thousand words. I was a heavy kid, from the earliest I can remember. I couldn't find my baby pictures, but at 13, it's kind of backwards. I was about 260 pounds, my bar mitzvah. This picture is in New York City in the winter about 7 years ago after a very, bad relapse, and I'd already had gastric bypass. This is like says it all. The big stomach and the glass of wine, and I hated wine, but I drank it anyway. And I always say I look at the eyes. It's kind of always being self-conscious. I mean, that's in New York. It's like going at 5 in the morning for bagels, and saying it was for the kids, but eating five myself. And this was probably one of the worst pictures I'd ever let anybody take is when my son won the soccer tournament. I was just so I didn't realize that 2X. I don't know if that was 2 or 3X didn't fit anymore. And I was like, what a shitty picture. And that's recent. I mean, that's, to me, the transformation. And that was joyous, in indoor soccer stadium, soccer arena a few weeks ago. And this was Saturday night this week, and the difference, taking pictures, having fun, and I'll just say, to me, that's, what the program's about. What it was like, I was a morbidly obese kid. I remember as early as I can remember crawling across the floor past the den to get to the refrigerator when my parents, after I was supposed to be in bed. I mean, and yeah, I was just a fat kid, and I was. Everybody was overweight in my household, but I was the fattest. I'm the youngest of four, and at 11, my parents were worried, so they put me, in some kind of crazy program at UCLA for the profusely obese adolescents, and they taught us what we should eat, and they diagnosed us as, basically having an eating disorder, and then marched us up to the swim stadium and made us swim laps next to the swim team. And I don't know about anybody else, but when you're morbidly obese, and they marched, I think it was 12 of us up to this to swim laps next. The swim team stopped swimming, to look at the fat kids, and which was probably one of the most humiliating things of my life, a bunch of, college. And obviously the program didn't work. We all gained weight except the one kid that they stomach, stabled his stomach, at 16 years old. So, to me, I knew I was different. Like I would ask myself, why do other kids eat two slices of pizza? Why do I eat two pizzas? I mean, I never was full. I never was full. And I tried for year, started getting older. I tried starving, and then I picked up bulimia. And I was a very hardcore bulimic in my teens, but I wasn't thin. I mean, I was a 300-pound bulimic. I did it more so I could eat more. Because I saw it like in magazines. But I was a I always thought it was a failure of bulimia. Because the magazines back then when I was a kid, it's like they're all skinny little, teenage girls, and I was like, like really fat. And I ate massive quantities, and I had, I hung out with compulsive overeaters. My best, I remember in when I was like 11 or 12, actually, one of my dear friends at the time, we would go to religious school, and there was a candy store down the street. And we only had 10-minute break. We would run like lunatics, two really fat kids running to the candy store like we're crazy. And it's like, and we had a buddy, this girl who was like skinny as shit. And it was kind of funny. It's like these two, really fat kids, like, 100 pounds overweight with a skinny little, turned out, she was anorexic, came out years later. And but I could not stop eating. And then, my best friend, after we moved out of our parents' house, we got an apartment in the San Fernando Valley. And the first thing we did was go to Costco. This is like freedom, like to you can binge as much as you want, and nobody's gonna say anything. So, we bought, back then, I don't think they sell anymore, like 20-pound thing of like tortilla chips. And, so you could make nachos three times a day, in the oven. And I will say, that experience, like, at that time was like crazy. And, I'll say, and I don't think about much, but I remember like a few days before I went to my first meeting, I went to 7-Eleven, and I hope, if I trigger anybody talking about food, I'm sorry, but I'm a foodie. And I remember going to 7-Eleven, and I think it was 2 in the morning. It was a pretty kind of shitty area. And I come out of 7-Eleven, and I got my fix. 7-Eleven is, to me, a drug pusher. Truly a legal one. Is I got a half gallon of ice cream and a bag of cookies, and at that time a carton of cigarettes. And I'm walking to the car, and some guy comes at me with a knife, and I went crazy. And I was always a wimpy guy, but it's like I thought he was after my cookies and ice cream, and I just started screaming at him. You're not getting anything. And he ran off. He was scared of me. And I mean, it was 2 in the morning, and I was like, I'm nuts. It's like, I wasn't about my safety and my life. It was because I never fought in high school. I let kids beat me up and stuff. I mean, I was the wimpy fat kid. But he was after my drugs, my food. And that's what, it's like I wasn't going to give up the food. I would have taken a knifing to keep my cookies and ice cream at that moment. And my roommate, who was fat, on a Wednesday night, he said, "I'm fat, you're fatter, let's go to an OA meeting." And I went because I didn't want to be left home alone. God forbid he gets the secret diet or something at a, OA. And his mother had been in OA many years even at that time, and this was 1987. So I went to the Wednesday night 100-pounders meeting in Reseda, and there was a Reseda office. And I remember that, It's like somebody welcomed me, and he wasn't fat. A guy welcoming me, and he's still around. He's like in his 80s now. And he was loving. And I heard everything in that 100-pounder meeting. I couldn't believe, like, people did wacky shit, like eating out of the trash and eating off the floor, and I was like, there was nothing I couldn't relate to, unfortunately. I mean, it's not like I was so happy I can relate to all this craziness, but I got something there is like I'm in the right place, and I'm home. And I kept coming back because when I walked into OA, I'd never been on a date. I mean, except the prom, who it turned out, the girl that went with me was, was a friend, but she was a lesbian. I didn't even know that, but and I learned how to live in OA, working the steps, everything, experience, good and bad. And I get, I got all everything I ever wanted. And I'll say the program was a miracle. I did crazy stuff in abstinence. And what happened to me, and I say it is, it's part of my story, is after about 15 and a half years, I had gotten money, property, prestige, a thin wife, two kids, well, one kid, she's pregnant with the second, and working out with a trainer every morning at 5 a.m. for a year. I was the thinnest. I mean, I could do pull-ups and push-ups, which I never could in my whole life. And I was on an infomercial for like fitness, crazy shit for this guy, the trainer. Is it's like, yeah, it feels like yesterday. They had a whole ceremony at the gym and they gave me a certificate for reaching 12 and a, my body weight, like my body fat percentage of 12.5%, which is low for a man. I mean, I was like really fit. And I thought I had arrived, and then we went to dinner, and my wife said, I hadn't had sugar in 16 years. She goes, you deserve to take a bite. And I took a bite of a creme brulee after 16 years, and nothing happened. So I took another bite, nothing happened. So then I ordered a second dessert, nothing happened, and then I gained 100 pounds in 6 months, and didn't want to come to a meeting, because, I can't go to a meeting fat. I didn't want to come back fat. I was like, oh, I'll lose the weight. Well, that took, unfortunately, many years of hell. And I still, I mean, when I met my ex-wife, I was 12 years abstinent. And on our second date, we walked for 7 hours on the beach, and by the t by the time after I went out, I couldn't walk, barely, a block without huffing and puffing, except for food. I would say, when I had my office like in, Century City on in LA, somehow I was able to get to the food court. When I'm in my disease, it's like somehow I struggle, but I can get to the food court. And I, my journey was instead of coming back to program, getting gastric bypass, getting a lap band, I did some weird stuff. I mean, some guy put some kind of, I don't know what it was, a hormone in my hip and put stitches, supposedly, I don't know if it was what the hell it was. I never even asked what it was, some quacky doctor. And I wanted an easier way. And basically what happened was 2 years, a little over 2 years ago, I started getting sick, physically sick. And I went in the hospital three times. And it, eventually it turned out I was, I basically ruptured my stomach from this disease because you can't get gastric bypass and eat massive quantities of food and ignore it and then practice bulimia and carry 300 pounds. And The third time, April 2 years ago, I guess it was 2024, I was rushed in because I was bleeding out and I had to get 3 pints of emergency blood. And that was the day after my wife filed for divorce. And I couldn't get much lower. She didn't visit me. And I was in the hospital, the MRI machine, and I hadn't been to a meeting in 15 years. And I prayed and I said, God, I'm ready to go back to OA. It's like, you know what? I tried my way, didn't work. And, it was hard to get out of bed, but I recovered. My ex-wife wasn't talking to me. I was still in the house. And I went to a meeting and I, the speaker, and I was depressed because it was one of the biggest meetings in California at one time, and in Beverly Hills, and it was small, it was hybrid now. But he said, "Come out to the valley. There's a bunch of guys." And so, make a long story short, because I can talk forever, is I met a bunch of guys that, that do it like a sober eating, and they're my, and I say is, I'm not real close to my own brothers, but they're my brothers in recovery, and I really, and I have a lot of women now, but that is, I never thought I would connect, be one amongst people, or necessarily if I wanted to be, but it's what a gift. And going through, the steps and not doing anything alone, because I had a lot of anger. I lost a marriage of 28 years to this disease. I did shitty shit and I wanted to do bad shit. I was angry and people talked me off the ledge, and that's what this program is about. We were, we abstain together. If I take the bite, I would have had more problems. But somebody said, you sit there and abstain, you'll get through it. You'll feel better. You binge, you probably won't live, because I mean, so because I have permanent damage to my body. But so, I surrendered, sat in the front row, and gave service. And in a lot of meetings, I was teary-eyed and, crying about what shoulda, woulda, coulda, and, I will say is, and I worked the steps, and I abstained, and then I found, it's like, go to in-person meeting. I go to a lot of meetings, and I didn't really work for a long time. It's like emotionally, I wasn't ready, even though I couldn't really afford to, but I was told all you have to do is abstain today and things will get better. Things will get better if you abstain. And I gave away an inventory and it was a miracle, and went through the regular steps. And I will say, and living in steps 10 and 11 and 12, is amazing. And I will say there's nothing like sponsoring. There is nothing. I never, because when I was absent for 16 years, I actually, nobody ever made it through the fifth step. In 16 years, I couldn't get anybody to stick around long enough to actually give away an inventory, which really, was a bummer. But it's amazing. I never thought I'd be somebody that would wake up early and take calls. I'm a selfish son of a bitch, but I was told many years ago, just act as if you're a nice person and caring. And then, you become it. And I will say, I'll wrap it up, is I had to walk through, I went to a big gala. I shared some pictures on Saturday night. First time ever, basically alone. And I knew, it was all the city people I know, but it was still, I was not, I didn't want to bring, I didn't bring a date or anything. And There was a basket of bread in the middle of the table, and people here know me. That's my frickin' thing. Is the basket of bread like at a party and stuff? I took a picture of it and ate what my abstinent food and prayed and actually did a text, and I got through it. You know, it's like that's what we have. You know, for me, I have to do is not pretend like, oh, I should not feel it. But so, to qualify, okay, I'll real quick qualify. You know, I came back, it'll be 2 years, I think in a month and a half, at the hospital. You know, I weighed in, I think at like three, right around 3:01. And, you know, I weighed in, I weigh in the first of the month, you know, 182, 183, yeah, 182 yesterday. And I'm grateful, but it's not about the weight. You know, it's the weight that was lifted. You know, people say, you know, you look different, you know, and it's not about physical. It's like I have a spirit, you know, and I got my, you know, spirit back. And I had it many years ago. And I will say, you know, you can get it and you could lose it. You know, you stop doing it, you stop working it, you will go back worse. So, you know, anybody here that's, you know, you're on this meeting, you're abstinent, stay that way. That's the miracle, stay abstinent. So, thank you all for being here, and thank you for supporting this meeting. I love this meeting so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rich. Everybody, please give a big round of applause for our speaker for a wonderful share. And now is the time to ask our speaker questions. As we are still recording, we ask that you put your questions in the chat and I will read them aloud. You're welcome to message them to me directly or to the group. We ask that you do not come off mute to ask your question or to thank the speaker verbally in this section, as we don't have permission to record other attendees. We will allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which time we will have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour, and then again in the parking lot. And Rich, our first question. What is your morning routine?
Thank you. You know, I love getting that question because that's what I always asked everybody, every speaker. My morning routine is I get up very early, like between 4, 4:15. You know, after going to the bathroom, because I'm at that age, I have to. I can't wait. Is I post the for today, and I read it and then post it on a few chats and the OA toolbox meditation. Actually, read it, you know, and then, you know, I put on, you know, I've gotten kind of a spiritual connection again with, you know, my religion. So I do like some religious prayers. You put a box on your head and stuff. When exactly when, and I know traditionally somebody told me I'm supposed to do it after the sun rises, and it's like too bad. You know, my higher power's okay with me doing it earlier. You know, it's like he'll forgive me. You know, if I want to do it at, you know, 5, and I'm not supposed to wait till 6. You know, it's like because I'm not that hardcore. But I take calls. I'm taking a few people. I don't know, 4 people like through the steps, and I take morning calls. I only do it in the morning, and then I go to my office now, and I switch companies because, you know, for spiritual reasons, I arrive exactly at 7, do my two-way prayer with another fellow. And, you know, if anybody wants, you know, in the parking lot or something, we can talk about two-way prayer is the most awesome thing. It really is. It's like connecting with a power greater than ourselves. And then work. And I'm the first one in the office. And that's one thing, you know, you know, to me, that's God, you know, because I'm a morning, I love being up early. You know, it's kind of like I get more done before most people are awake. You know, it's like, you know, it's like I feel, you know, it's like my son's, Unfortunately, in their 20s, they like sleep in. It's like, they're like, you wake up at 4, and I said, and you wake up at 12? I mean, it's like, I said, that's a whole day, and it's like, but I realize, for me to be productive, I have to, plan, and it's also using the tools like planning the day. What am I going to do? Who do I have to call? It's not being, trying to be as proactive. So, but that in the morning, I love getting up early. And I didn't when I was in my disease. It's interesting. I used to get up early, and then when I went out, because I think also I was like hungover from sugar and stuff and the food, because I couldn't sleep also. I had sleep apnea. I had, all the remnants of overeating. So I think that answers it.
Thank you. When you gained your weight back, did you also regain the bulimia?
Yes. And worse. Yes, I unfortunately practiced bulimia in some of the finest restaurants in Beverly Hills, and which is insane. To practice bulimia, 300, like eating, which I didn't have room, but get a $100 steak and get, no, I'm going to get physically sick. And I will say the humiliation, of the bulimic side of the disease. I mean, the worst I'll always remember is at Mastro's in Beverly Hills, a fine steakhouse. I go in there and I'm so sick and I need to, because I was so full and feeling bad. And there's a bathroom attendant there, guy with all the accoutrements. And I'm like, oh, shit. And it's like, he's like, are you okay? No, I'm not really okay. But you know what? You have to tip him more. It's like, to basically almost like shut up. Don't say anything, don't tell anybody, that, basically some, real fat guy basically barfed his brains out and then goes back and eats more and does it again. I mean, that is kind of insanity, because I got sick before the food even came, just on the bread. So yes, but it was worse. I didn't ever think it, it's a progressive disease. You don't even do it. It gets worse.
Thank you. And when you came back into OA, did it make you more humble?
Humiliated, yes, is, I guess, humble. Yes. And it also made me sad, because there were people that were, that had passed away with long-term abstinence, and I missed funerals and stuff. I mean, I was very active, and the longest abstaining member who ran the Valley office, Maxine, who was the first national treasurer. I worked side by side with her, and she passed when I was gone. And but then there were people that I couldn't believe were still around, and it's like crazy. It's like people, I remember them at their first meeting, and it's like, young girl, it's like, she was a young girl. She was 17. She came in, took her 6 years to get abstinent, got 27 years. And it's like, wow, it blew me away, the recovery, around here. And, I left. The program didn't leave me. The people didn't abandon me. I abandoned, the program.
Thank you. When you came back from relapse, how long did it take you to get abstinent?
The first meeting, and I think, I mean, I was absent probably before my first meeting. I mean, I was, but I had a spiritual experience in the hospital, like, kind of like lying there, I knew God didn't want me to die that day for some reason. And I kind of wanted to die at that moment. It's like the doctor, because the doctor 24 hours before told me to go into emergency. Basically, I don't want to be graphic, but I was shitting black, and that means you're bleeding out. And I was like, oh, I'll go tomorrow. I wasn't really into self-care, especially after I got served for divorce papers. I was like, oh, I didn't really want to run to the hospital. And then, but then part of me is like, oh, if I go to the hospital, maybe, she'll come visit me. And she didn't, she didn't. I was there for 3 nights, she didn't. And that's what really actually, I think, made me turn to God, is I'm all alone in the hospital. I didn't even get a private room. I got a shitty common room. And it was like hell, but I kept repeating the third step prayer because I still remembered it. And it's like God, God, if you don't, if you don't want me to die, I'll do whatever you want. I didn't negotiate. I was like, and that I surrendered. I did the third step. I really did the first three steps in the hospital. For me, that was my experience, is that I'm powerless over food. I believed it only power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And I did make a decision to turn my will and my life over. That's it. I'm done. My way didn't work. Gastric bypass didn't work. A lap band didn't work. Going to a trainer, every morning didn't work. It was trying, it was using everything else but surrender. To any other questions?
Yeah. Two that are somewhat similar. There's one of what is your OA spiritual routine, and another of how do you practice your step 11?
My spiritual routine, I mean, I surrender in the morning. I do a two-way prayer, which I think really guides me. And we actually do it as like a almost a three-way, where then there's reflection. And that was really hard for me, even reflecting on somebody else's. A two-way prayer basically is asking God a question and letting God write. You almost use your hand to write an answer. And then, the way I do it with another fellow, because we do some readings first, is we then reflect on each other, but not our personal, like what, like listen to a power greater than ourselves. And I think for me, like step 11, and prayer is asking, meditation is kind of listening. And I hate meditation. I mean, but I don't hate it as much. And like last June, I happened to be on the mo Monday morning meditation meeting out of the valley, and my sponsor basically said, "Oh, Rich will be the secretary of this meeting." I was like, "Shit, shit." That means I have to, like, I can't, like, during the meditation, because there's two meditations, like silence. That means I can't, like, go up and do stuff, get dressed and, brush my teeth or even take a shower, blow it off. And it's like, and then it got better. It forced me to, like, be receptive.
Thank you. What does your step 10 practice look like, and how do you work your step 10?
Step 10, for me, step 10 is pausing during the day. And when I'm about to, like, flip somebody off, keeping my hand down, when somebody cuts me off, and, because I'm not a road ranger, but I could, like, in a car, I could be like an asshole, and kind of controlling that. But also, to me, a lot of it's pause throughout the day. I mean, I don't do it every night, but I do like a daily reflection through the toolbox. Was I productive? Do I resent anybody? But I try not to wait until the end of the day, because I could eat before I get to it. There's a good chance if I let it, and I will share, like, I was at this gala, and one of my ex-wife's friends that my wife actually, she had thrown a baby shower for. So, we're pretty close. And I saw them coming in. I was like, shit, shit, shit. And my first reaction was to sort of go hide, basically hide from them and go the other way because I don't want to. And then about 10 minutes later, I decided, what would God want me to do? I went right up to them and gave them both a hug. And they were sort of in shock. And they said, oh, you look great. I said, yeah, no, I feel good. And it took the power away. Because that's the kind of stuff hiding from people. I don't want to, oh, I'm going to be uncomfortable. This is my ex-wife. Well, you know what? I was at the event, I bought a ticket, and it's like, but it's interesting. Then I didn't even look for them. I didn't watch them. I wasn't in the back of my corner of my eye. So to me, that's really like the 10th step is doing it as we're going. That's been my experience, and my sponsor, taught me is, it's like, don't wait because it might be too late, and call people. To me, I call people. I do probably five outreach calls a day at least, and people call me.
Thank you. The next one, there's a comment first, then there's a question at the end of it. Rich, I was lucky to hear you speak at the birthday party in January, and you said something that has stuck with me and helped me so much in finding peace with a plan of eating. It was that you can have a sandwich, but not the bread at the table, and you can have a taco, but not the endless bowl of chips. Just wanted to thank you, and I'm grateful to hear you speak again tonight. And then they were wondering if you have any more thoughts about creating a plan of eating.
Number one is, first, my experience is number one, figure out what the alcoholic foods are, but do it with somebody in the fellowship because I don't think I could do it myself, because also I'll either be too restrictive or too lenient. I can help you decide, what's appropriate. I'm not very good judge of my own food, because I'm insane when it comes to food. So, but what I did was I came up, went through the sober eating worksheet with my sponsor, and then gave that to a dietitian and was 100% honest with the dietitian and said, I don't eat this. I can't eat this. I can't eat this because I'm a compulsive eater and I'm a bulimic and I'm insane. And I can't, and can you work? And so she was wonderful. And, but I don't suggest it for anybody else because of all the damage I did. I eat small meals. I eat like five small meals a day and spaced out. And that's what I have to do because I can't eat more than like 2 or 3 ounces, like chicken and things like that. But work it with a sponsor and just be honest. And I will say, I tell the guys, I sponsor, I send in my food and pictures, but make it look nice. Eat good food. You deserve good food. We're not on a diet. This is, we're not a diet club. It's like, I've said, it's like, God, that, if I ate, I've told guys, I said, what you're eating looks like shit. It's like make it look better at least. And it doesn't look like you put anything on it because it's for me, I have to do a way of life, not, a diet. So, it's like, and the last thing I'll say is, okay, there's only 9 things on my alcoholic list. How many different foods are there in the world? Probably 20 million. So big deal. So there's 9 things I can't eat, and most of them start with sugar, or fried. That's pretty, but there's so much food I can eat. It's not restrictive. I had my fair share and a lot of other people's, in the process.
We're just about at 15 minutes, but I have one more question in the chat so we can finish off with it. What does your movement exercise look like now?
I don't, I'm not right pleasant presently. I can't say I'm not consistent. I do stretching. I walk, I try to, I run some soccer programs. I'm walking a lot back and forth. I keep praying for the willingness to go to the gym that I've been a member for many, probably 20 years. But I walk, and actually the one thing I do while I'm in my office, I took this because I bought some of the, we all bought wacky stuff like exercise equipment. I bought this weird band thing that like has a spring on it. So while I'm sitting, and it's resistance, so while I'm even working on my on the phone, I'll start doing curls and stuff like that and actually get some stretching in, which is cool. But I park far. I don't valet park. I've kind of like to me, God doesn't want me to park as close as I can. When I went to the Gale, I parked like 7 blocks away. Also, so I didn't have to pay $40 for parking. But like, why? What do I need to, park the closest, find the closest space? Because that was my disease. Even when I used to go to the gym, I would try to find the closest space possible at the gym, which is insane. I mean, if you it's like, oh, I don't want to walk to the gym door. So, but no, I'm not doing a lot of, and I'd like to.
Well, thank you so much, Rich. Thank you for your service tonight.
Thank you.